As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. It's a magazine you don't have to feel obligated to buy from your nephew's fundraiser. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, free on your radio. Now. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's hard when you're trading four players for one, but we like all of them. We're attached to all of them. But Donaldson's been an outstanding player, very durable guy in the performance in the All-Star game.
There you go. That was Alex Anthopoulos in reference to a bit of a trade yesterday. I am Ben Ennis. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live alongside Mike Johnson and John Gregg. Plenty to talk about today, just a little bit. We will get to the Raptors, their loss to the Dallas Mavericks yesterday. Also, the Maple Leafs in action tonight against the Washington Capitals and Alex Ovechkin. They beat the Islanders yesterday. And we'll do a little Grey Cup preview as well, because that's a thing that's happening this weekend. But the whole day, this whole program is going to be dominated by yesterday's blockbuster of a deal. Brett Laurie taking his locker full of Red Bulls to California, off to the Oakland A's, along with Franklin Barreto, Kendall Graveman, and Sean Nolan. In comes a guy who might very well be the best third baseman in all of baseball, Josh Donaldson, a member of the Blue Jays. He's outstanding, got a great haircut as well, and all of a sudden, this Blue Jays, I don't know if you want to go 2-3-4, wherever Donaldson hits, 3-4-5, is among the scariest in all of baseball, John.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is a no-brainer trade for Alex Anthopoulos. You know, obviously, it came out of nowhere. It surprised everybody in the baseball world. And, you know, when you can get a guy like Donaldson, who, as you mentioned, might be the best third baseman in baseball, has WAR numbers that rival Mike Trout's.
Right up there.
Right there. And if you can, you know, create this lineup of the top five guys, I mean, you're right. It's one of the scariest in baseball. And, you know, when you also get a guy who stays healthy, which is key. And, when you got Jose Reyes, who's kind of iffy most years, and you got Laurie, who simply can't stay on the field, it's decimating that side of your infield. And, you know, Josh Donaldson will play 160 games for you.
This is a blow you out of the water type deal, not unlike the one we saw a couple of years ago with the Miami Marlins. And, yeah, that didn't exactly work out. And there were a number of factors that have gone into that. And clearly the only way to eventually evaluate this trade will be what happens this season. But on the surface, Mike, I mean, you can go and grab a guy who last year hit 29 home runs, year before 24, in a ballpark in Oakland where you do not hit home runs. You throw him in that Homer Dome at Rogers Center. You got to expect good things.
This is there's no way anyone can say, any Toronto sports fan can say anything negative about this deal at the moment, because on paper it seems like a steal. For the present, you know, we'll see what those three younger players do later in their career, but I don't think a lot of Jays fans are concerned about that right now. They see Donaldson. He had 29 home runs last year. Most of them were on the road. Most of his homers were on the road. He comes to the Rogers Center. He's going to be just smashing all year. At least that's what people are hoping. That's what should happen. He's in his prime. He's the kind of guy that doesn't get traded. You don't see these star, you know, top rate, top shelf players traded very often. And the Jays, and he's doesn't have an expiring contract. It's a win-win. Let's just, you know, nobody talk about pitching for a while. Nobody talk about anything else they need to improve on. Let's just kind of sit back and kind of marvel at this deal. This is a great deal for Anthopoulos. It's a win-win for Jays fans right now. I don't see how you can say anything negative about this deal. It's fantastic.
I think you're right, and I think you raise a good point with getting out of Oakland. I mean, he had 18 homers on the road last year. He had majority of his RBI came on the road last year.
Knee-deep in sewage, too, every time the toilets overflow.
Yeah. I think he hit 276 on the road last year and 255 for the season. So getting out of Oakland is only going to add to all of those numbers, only going to make him better. I think he was probably as surprised as everybody else to leave. I know that he on Twitter last night, he was thanking the fans and everything. But
great Twitter handle as well.
Bringer of Rain.
Yeah, at Bringer of Rain 20 is Josh Donaldson's Twitter handle.
I wish it was mine.
Too bad it's taken. But that's what makes these deals in this day and age so great is the instant reaction from Twitter. And I spent hours on the thing last night just gathering information and trying to, you know, crystallize my opinions on it. Now, obviously, there's going to be another side to the story, right? Like, Billy Beane's not an idiot. But the argument that, well, this can't be such a great deal because Billy Beane's not an idiot is not a valid argument, okay? Billy Beane has something else in mind. He's not getting nothing in return. He's getting Brett Laurie, a guy with tremendous potential. We've seen it a couple of times. When he first arrived in the major leagues, remember that series in Baltimore? It was that whole half a season when he was up with the Blue Jays was spectacular and really gave you a glimpse that this guy could be Josh Donaldson.
But he's never been that guy.
Exactly.
Right? And that's the frustrating part. And I think, you know, talented, yes. Super tooled, yes. But, you know, 240 or whatever he's been hitting and playing, you know, 70 games last year. And even he great range at third. But Donaldson's actually, by the defensive war numbers, he's a better third baseman. So, you know, for me, it's, yes, you're giving away some future. You're giving up on, you know, a talented guy, a Canadian guy, which was much ballyhooed when he came up. It's actually good, I think, that Anthopoulos would trade a Canadian and not kind of hold on to him just for that sake. But, again, it's a no-brainer. You're giving up some future and, you know, some middle-of-the-rotation maybe pitchers and a shortstop who's 5 years away from the majors.
What's shocking to me, and knowing the way Billy Beane operates, he's not adverse to trading big names and MVP caliber type players, but he usually does it. And Mike, you mentioned this. I mean, this isn't an expiring contract. He's under team control. Josh Donaldson is for 4 more years. Brett Laurie's going to be a free agent before Josh Donaldson, despite being 5 years younger than him. It's ridiculous that not only do the Blue Jays get this guy in Donaldson, who is, I mean, he's arbitration eligible, so he's going to get paid a little bit. He's not going to make no money, but you won't have to really pay him, and you won't have to make a huge commitment for another 4 years. The Blue Jays will be playing on real grass at Rogers Center by the time Josh Donaldson is ready to get paid, if we believe that will happen in 2018. He's got 4 more years of team control for a guy that is, I mean, who's a better third baseman? Maybe you got Manny Machado in Baltimore. Like, there's an argument to be made there. Evan Longoria has shown at times he can be among the elite third baseman, but right now, Josh Donaldson is pretty much the gold standard. And if you're hoping that one day Brett Laurie, you know, turns in a season where he plays 155 games, 158, like Donaldson has for the last two seasons, you're praying he comes somewhere close to Donaldson. I don't think even the most, you know, pie in the sky projections have him getting to Donaldson's level that Donaldson's actually achieved in the last 2 years. And when you look at the other players in this deal, and Alex Anthopoulos mentioned it yesterday, first of all, Barreto's 18. He wasn't going to be in the major leagues this year. He's maybe 3, 4, 5 years down the line. We saw Graveman in September in a limited stretch. Sean Nolan we've seen a little bit as well. But those three guys were not projected to be on this Blue Jays team next year. So this season, you're talking about a swap for Donaldson. You're giving up Brett Laurie. For this season, it's a one-for-one trade.
When was the last time you saw an MVP caliber guy traded and you didn't have to give up the top of your farm system?
Yeah.
Like, how did Alex make this move and not have to throw in a Stroman or a Sanchez or a Norris or a Pompey? He didn't. I mean, yes, you know, he gave up the number five prospect in the system, but an 18-year-old. And yes, you know, you don't want to give up a middle infielder, but, you know, he did it without taking anything away from the current lineup other than Laurie. And obviously Donaldson is a huge upgrade on that. And he's creating a lineup that's fun to watch, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be a homer happy lineup again this year. And if they can get Melky back as well, you know, there's going to the table setters are going to be right up there for all three of those guys to knock them home. And it's going to be fun to watch.
Does that play into it, this move? Does Melky Cabrera, who is still out there and the Blue Jays are still talking to, and his agent appeared on Sportsnet 590 The Fan yesterday addressing the turf rumors, and maybe we'll get to that as well, about how Blue Jays should boot the Argos from Rogers Center as Mike shakes his head.
Unbelievable.
But does Melky Cabrera look at a move like this and say, well, you know what? I was on the fence, and, you know, it's still going to come down to dollars, but if the dollars are there, I want to play on a lineup that goes Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, Josh Donaldson. Mike, does this affect his thinking?
It has to. The Jays already had one of the best lineups, hitting lineups in the MLB, and they're an infinitely better team today than they were yesterday. Melky has to see this and think, I want to be a part of this. He says him and his agent the other day came out and said the turf really isn't an issue, whether it is or not. I think he would put up with little issues he has with Rogers Center or other things. Like you said, if the money's there, adding Melky to the lineup, having the first six batters look like that, it looks like an all-star team.
Yeah,
it's. I don't see how, if you're Melky Cabrera, you don't look at this addition and think this is going to help my game, because it'll help his game as well. And for the Jays, I think it's very important to still heavily pursue Melky, because they have a lot of right-handed bats in the lineup, and Melky being a switch hitter is very important to include these left-handed bats. As good as Donaldson is, it's nice having that variety that the Jays can rely on. So from the Jays' perspective, you have to continue to pursue Melky.
Oh, they're heavily. Not even close to done. I don't think anybody thinks they're done.
Absolutely,
I mean,
not.
If the money is comparable to what else he's being offered on the market, I don't see how he doesn't come back.
Right.
The Jays are in a win now type of mode. And, you know, from all accounts, Melky is good in the clubhouse. You know, he's a big part of that team and the way they operate. And I don't understand why he wouldn't come back as long as the money is acceptable.
Well, you mentioned in the clubhouse. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Mike Johnson and John Grigg. You mentioned the clubhouse. I talked to Mike Wilner about this last week on this radio station about this clubhouse. Surprising to me, because I was down there and didn't realize it was this bad. But Mike has a source who said that this was one of the worst clubhouses he's seen in his time in the major leagues. Now, since the end of last season, we've seen lots of movement. Adam Lind is gone. Anthony Gose is gone. Colby Rasmus is gone. In comes a guy who, yes, is by any way you evaluate a great addition offensively and defensively, Russell Martin, but part of it also is what he brings to this clubhouse. Brett Laurie's gone. Now, I'm not saying Brett Laurie was like a clubhouse cancer or anything. We know he's a guy, I don't know, we all have friends like this, right, that are like hyped up, and there are moments where it's a little much. I don't know if that was going on in the clubhouse. I have no idea. Honestly, I'm not down there enough to say that. But could this be a move that also addresses that clubhouse chemistry, John?
Yeah, sure, it could be. I mean, I'm not down there enough to speak to it either. But, I mean, the one thing about all those guys who have been moved out is none of them were performing up to expectations.
Sure.
Sure, Adam Lind was mashing left-handers last year, but
righties.
But, you know, that was it. He couldn't hit anything else. You know, Ghost has been a perennial disappointment in terms of he just can't hit major league pitching. Laurie can't stay on the field, and Rasmus was, you know, an experiment that failed.
Right.
So
yeah, if those guys have their clubhouse chemistry problems but are performing at MVP levels, they're not out of here, right?
Well, and maybe they don't have clubhouse chemistry problems if they're performing and they're in the lineup every day. I mean, of course Rasmus would be unhappy. He was a starting center fielder who got benched for a guy who can't hit. And, you know, and Lind probably wants to play every day, or at least try to. So, yeah, I mean, are there clubhouse issues? There would seem to be something, at least discontent. I mean, at the trade deadline last year with the comments by Bautista and Jansen about not making any moves, of which, you know, I was critical of on this radio show, and I think a lot of people were. I can't speak to say that they were ridding themselves of some bad apples, but, I mean, there's no doubt that they are turning over that clubhouse somewhat.
Yeah, it certainly appears that way. What's also interesting about this offseason is if you went into it and you said the Blue Jays are going to address their needs, it's going to be third base and catcher. You would say, excuse me? Come again? I thought the needs were maybe left field if Melky Cabrera's gone, probably second base, and definitely the bullpen. And those have not been addressed yet. Maybe you could say second base has, with the trading of Anthony Gose for Devin Travis. But they go out and get a guy, a replacement for Brett Laurie, who, I mean, when he's on the field, he's been great. And, you know, Deonna Navarro was great behind the plate as well. It's hard to argue with who they brought in.
No, I mean, you're bringing in all-star caliber players, right? I mean, and that's an upgrade at both positions, no matter how you look at it. Do they still need some help in the bullpen? Yes. Do they need to re-sign Melky or somebody of close to his caliber? Yes, they need that in the outfield. But, you know, the catching position is better than it was the end of last year. Third base is much better today than it was yesterday. You just simply can't argue with those moves.
Yeah, it's really hard to argue when you pick up a guy like Josh Donaldson. Another aspect of this as well is that you're looking at the last couple of years on the deals of Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Bautista. They have club options for 2016 with, you know, barring some big injury, they're obviously going to be picked up by the Blue Jays. So you got 2 years left of those guys. And if things get off to a rocky start next year or Blue Jays don't make great moves this offseason and it really...
Well, they have already. I mean, they could do nothing. And wouldn't this offseason be a win already?
I would say yes, but there's still some things that need to be addressed. We mentioned it, the bullpen.
Yeah, there are holes. But, I mean, they are winners in the offseason right now.
Yeah, no question. But does this, I mean, we talked about Melky Cabrera being impacted and his decision-making this offseason. What does this say to Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista that this team can go out and grab a guy like Josh Donaldson?
You know what? It's got to take pressure off Bautista. They have added offense that, you know, Bautista and Encarnacion are the go-to guys when it comes to offense. And they've added a couple guys that can support them. We saw last season Bautista get, you know, he was verbally upset and he was critical of certain things the team and the management did or didn't do. And you could tell that when it was apparent that they were getting further and further out of the playoff race, he was very frustrated. And I think adding guys like Russell Martin, who by all accounts is a good character guy, he can take some of the leadership pressure off a guy like Bautista. It's, again, another win-win situation. Bautista is going to benefit from having them in the lineup. He's also going to have a benefit from you know, not having to carry the load in terms of leadership. And also, if you know, we start talking down the line, you know, sometime next season, would the Jays ever trade one of those two guys? The Jays have done, they've supplemented their offense with Donaldson a bit that maybe they could afford to move one of those guys to improve their pitching staff or something. I mean, we're talking down the road. We'll see how next season starts and all that. But I think this is a good move for Bautista because it will ease some pressure that I felt he was feeling last season, especially late in the season.
I think, too, in Russell Martin, you're bringing in that kind of leadership quality that you know, you could argue that was missing a little bit, not in Bautista and, you know, not in the top end of the clubhouse. But, you know, when you've got some frenetic guys running around who get hurt and don't play up to expectations and are kind of, you know, quiet and you know, not as outgoing and maybe not as talkative, and there's cliques that form in the room, I mean, you trade some of those guys, and it's, again, I'm not saying anything was their fault, but you trade them, bring in, like, you know, a respected veteran like Russell Martin who can, you know, teach the young pitchers who are the future of this rotation and help them mature and help them, you know, with game calling and all that. I mean, I think it's a big help, and I believe Russell Martin will be a bigger addition behind the plate than he is swinging the bat. But, you know, Josh Donaldson will be a bigger addition at the plate, obviously, than anywhere else.
Yeah, he's been unbelievable. And again, he plays in a horrible offensive ballpark in Oakland. And it's not just the fences and how far you have to hit it.
Foul territory.
It's ridiculous. And to realize how much that impacts the game offensively, how many balls that would be out of play and foul balls and the at-bat continues, he's going to experience a huge, huge difference making the transition to Rogers Centre.
I would not expect him to hit 255 this year.
No, and especially when you're sandwiched maybe between Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion, or hitting behind them or hitting in front of them. Either way, it's going to be good times for Josh Donaldson, you would expect. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Grigg and Mike Johnston. This is a salvo also fired by the Blue Jays to the American League East when the Red Sox had fired the first, and it was a rather large one, both in size. Pablo Sandoval is a big dude, and Hanley Ramirez, a guy who is on the surface looks like superfluous, but he's going to play left field, and there's probably some more moves to be made there. Maybe Yoenis Cespedes leaving town as well. But when the Red Sox look at what the Blue Jays have done here, grabbing Josh Donaldson and solidifying the middle of that lineup, is that a situation where they say, oh, you know what? Pablo Sandoval's good. Doesn't look like he's the best third baseman in the American League East anymore.
Yeah, though. I mean, why didn't I make that call to Billy Bean? I mean, you look at the numbers, and Donaldson has like 53 home runs the past couple of years, and I think the Panda's got 30. So,
right.
I mean, in terms of power numbers, the Jays win. In terms of defense, the Jays win. In terms of dollars saved, the Jays win big. And I'm sure there are a number of GMs around Major League Baseball this morning who are scratching their heads and wondering how come they didn't know that this was even possible.
Well, and that's a key aspect of or at least a key takeaway that I took from Alex Anthopoulos' conference call yesterday was that he went to Billy Bean at first and said, hey, listen, any chance of getting Josh Donaldson off you? He said, there's just no way. It's not going to happen. A couple of days later, he went back and said, well, what if we include Brett Laurie into this deal? He said, okay, maybe we can talk. And it ends up being a 4-for-1 deal. I don't know how many GMs, listen, I'm not obviously on the line with these GMs when they're making these calls, but I wonder how many of them have the, first of all, intestinal fortitude to go back and after you've been rejected to come up with another plan of attack to go get a guy who was an MVP candidate. I guess you have to have stones to make a deal like this in the first place, but to go out and ask for a guy like this seems like not every GM in Major League Baseball would be out there doing that.
I loved it. It seems like he, you know, he aggressively pursued a player he desperately wanted. And it's refreshing to see, you know, if Anthopoulos was in a position where maybe the Jays made the playoffs last season and there was no questions about his job security, maybe he doesn't go back to Billy Bean a second time. And, you know, if he was comfortable and wasn't concerned about where his position in the organization is, how confident ownership is in his leadership, maybe he doesn't go back for a second time. Maybe he takes no for an answer. But I think that he was feeling the pressure that he needed to do something. He needed to, maybe the Russell Martin signing wasn't enough. Maybe make another move, put his, you know, his momentum, his stock kind of over the edge. And I like that he was, he aggressively went after a guy that is clearly, at least on paper, going to help this team. He didn't say no for an answer. And I think that's a refreshing sign for Blue Jays fans as well.
Okay, I got a question for you then. We mentioned before that they didn't have to trade any of their young arms to make this deal. What if Billy Bean says, yeah, we'll do this. I want Sanchez. Do you do it?
Well, it's a different conversation to be sure, because as much as I think Kendall Graveman could be something and Sean Nolan could be something, Aaron Sanchez could be, you know, top. I don't know if the projections are ace, but he could be a 2 or 3
or
guy.
What if he says Stroman or Norris? Do you do it?
Well, Stroman, I think, has proved enough that that's probably a deal breaker. Right. I don't think, although you're looking at an MVP,
you're getting an all-star, you're getting the second best guy in the majors or in the American League, at least behind Mike Trout in terms of war.
Yeah. And this deal, the only guys that are going to come back and bite you are Laurie. Clearly, he's already in the major leagues, and Barreto. The other two guys aren't going to light the world on fire. They might be nice contributors, Graveman and Nolan, but they're not going to come back and haunt you. And you're not going to say, man, I really wish we hadn't let those guys go. Now, Sanchez. And certainly Stroman could be those guys. Stroman, I think that's probably taking away too much from your rotation if you're giving up Laurie and Anstrom, and although you're probably not giving up Barreto or those other guys, probably a 2-for-1 deal.
Sure.
Yeah, it's an interesting question.
Because I would take Ohonis, right?
Yes.
To move a guy who's all hyped, or he's all hyped up in this city. He obviously played well last year. And same with Sanchez, same with Norris, who rose through the minors and got to the majors last year. That would be ballsy.
Plus, I mentioned that those other three guys weren't projected to end up on the Blue Jays this coming season.
And that's why there's three of them in there, right?
Right.
Instead of just one guy.
Yeah. Stroman obviously is very much supposed to be part of the Blue Jays next season. That's why I'm not a GM. Stop asking those tough questions, John. It's not nice. So is Alex Anthopoulos, is he a ninja again? Do we get to keep calling him a ninja? Because he lost his ninja status, right? After that trade with the Marlins, that people looked at and thought, man, what a great deal. Blue Jays absolutely fleeced the Marlins, took on a bunch of salary, but they fleeced him. And for a number of different reasons, it hasn't worked out for the Blue Jays. Is Alex Anthopoulos once again a ninja or not?
I've always asked myself, how does one regain ninja status?
Do you ever lose it?
That's another
question.
Or are
you just like an old ninja maybe who's not working that much these days?
Yeah, right. Yeah, retired ninja. Like maybe he just hung up the gi and he put the gi back on. Seems like it. I guess, you know what? You're a ninja if it works out. Blue Jays win 95 games this year. We can call him a ninja.
So what is he now then? Because they didn't win 95 last year.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's just like the kid in karate. He's a white belt. But he can go white belt to black belt very quickly.
Alex Anthopoulos, yellow belt.
When we come back, we will revisit this topic at the top of the next hour as well. Talk a little bit more. And we'll get into the turf discussion that was opened up once again by Buster Olney reporting that Melky Cabrera would prefer to leave Toronto and go play somewhere where they play on real grass. And we'll get to the discussion about why we have to wait until 2018 to see real grass at Rogers Center. But when we come back, we'll talk about the Raptors losing a game, which just feels not right. Feels weird. Only the third time this season it's happened. They're 13-3 now after dropping a 106-102 decision to the Mavericks yesterday. Also lost one of their best players, DeMar DeRozan, didn't score a point in that game, and then suffered a groin injury. So Raptors head out on the road. They're in L.A. to play the pretty lousy Lakers tomorrow. It's coming up next. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Gregg, Mike Johnson on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Jamie Doyle.
As a sports fan, when you look back, it's the moments you remember. That one hit, that one catch, that specific play you'll relive for years to come. So when it came time to hand out our fourth annual Sportsnet Awards for the best, worst, and most noteworthy from the year in sports, the choices boiled down to a collection of moments. Derek Jeter's career-ending walk-off single, Luis Suarez's World Cup biting attack, Richard Sherman's verbal smackdown of Michael Crabtree after the NFC Championship game. But one moment stands out above all, the Women's Olympic Hockey Final. Canada trailing the United States 1-0 as time winds down, a Canadian defenseman is blocked off by the linesman at the U.S. blue line, allowing the Americans a long shot at Canada's empty net. If the puck goes in, it's all over. Canadians from coast to coast held their breath as the puck slid down the ice. Canadian players could only watch and wait, their gold medal dreams hanging in the balance as the puck hits the post. Canada would go on to win that game and the gold medal in overtime. But that moment, those agonizing seconds before the killer goal that wasn't, is what stands out. For more memorable moments from the past year in sports, check out the 2014 Sportsnet Awards.
This story and more appears in the latest edition of Sportsnet Magazine, available on Next Issue and in the Apple Newsstand.
3 in the air for Lou, no good. Rebound Patterson, kick out Lowry. 35 seconds to go. Lowry drive, lay it in. 99-96. It's a one possession game with 33 seconds to go.
That was Paul Jones on the Raptors Radio Network. That was nice, but wasn't enough. Raptors fall 106-102 to the Dallas Mavericks last night. They fall to paltry 13-3 this season. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Mike Johnston and John Gregg. So the Raptors, still best team in the Eastern Conference, suffer their third loss of the season, second on home court, but bigger significance to losing just your third game of the season is losing if not your best, one of your best players in DeMar DeRozan, who exits this game after playing 20 minutes. He was 0 of 8 from the field. And those sweeper people, the court people, you know, with the mops or whatever, they clean up the sweat, did not do a good job because DeMar's leg went splaying sideways.
Fire that guy.
That guy or gal should be on the next flight out of here, I guess. They're calling it a strained groin. We don't have an update today, but I guess we're going to get one as far as the severity, whether it's a week, couple of weeks. We know groins, at least in hockey, can be tough ones to come back from. Well, really any sport, they can be kind of iffy.
It'd be tough for us to come back from.
Yeah, really?
Try climbing stairs.
Yeah, try speaking on the radio with a strained groin. Let me tell you, it's tough. So either way, it looks like at least he's going to be gone for tomorrow's game, you would think, in L.A. Against the Lakers. The Raptors go through a three-game road swing in L.A. tomorrow against a Lakers team that's god-awful, in Sacramento on Tuesday. Then they wrap it up in Utah on Wednesday. But on the surface, John, this DeRozan injury, it'll be interesting to see what happens to this team the coming games if he's out for a week or so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm your typical Toronto sports fan, so I'm always waiting for the bad to happen.
Yeah, the trap door to swing open.
And this is it. I mean, it doesn't get any worse for the Raptors than losing the lone all-star on your team, your Team USA player, your best player. I mean, you could argue Kyle Lowry is that guy maybe right now, but, you know, for the past few years, D-Ro has been the man and one of the few shining lights in this city, athlete-wise, and he's out. And if it's for any length of time, even though the Raps might be the deepest team in the league, there is no way that they can withstand losing him for too long. I mean, he is the man on this team.
Lou Williams. Lou Williams, the way Lou Williams has been playing so far this season, I don't think Raptors fans should be too concerned, overly concerned, you know, panicking if DeMar is out for an extended period of time, because Lou Williams has a better field goal percentage than DeRozan this year. He's better from three. He has good fundamentals defensively. We'll see, you know, if the Raptors need him to step up in a starting role every night for an extended period of time. We'll see if he can keep up what he's done so far. But, you know, DeMar, I think it would be a bigger loss if a guy like Kyle Lowry was out for an extended period of time. I think Lou Williams has shown enough this season he can step in and produce points. You know, I think he's not quite on DeMar's level. No one's really saying that. But I don't think people should be panicking. Again, we don't know how serious DeMar's injury is, but if he's out for an extended period of time, I don't think we should go panic mode.
He was kicking and screaming on the court yesterday.
It did not look good yesterday, not at all. And as far as Lou Williams goes, I like Lou Williams. He is a nice second unit guy. The reason he might have a better field goal percentage than DeRozan is he's a second unit guy.
Right.
He's not playing against number ones like starters in the NBA. Right. He's, you know, he's an important key. But, you know, if Kyle Lowry goes down and you're looking at Grievous Vasquez as your starting point guard, sure, he's a nice replacement, but he's not Kyle Lowry, and Lou Williams is not DeMar DeRozan. There's no two ways about it, guys.
Plus, he's not going to play 48 minutes, Lou Williams, and so now you're looking at, well, who's your second option there? Who is now, if you're taking away that second unit shooting guard, the guy that comes in off the bench and provides that offensive spark, well, who is it now if Lou Williams is all of a sudden in the starting lineup for an extended period of time?
You're looking at Terrence Ross, right, who has shown some growth this year, and earlier in the season looked like, oh man, what do we have here? But he's not been doing it as well recently, and he's streaky. He's not pouring them in, and you know it really really changes the dynamic of this team. This team is going to have to become Kyle Lowry brings the ball up the floor and gets it to Jonas Valanciunas. If they can get it down low to him, if he can be the big man in the East that everybody thinks he can be, then we can weather, this team can weather the storm. If there's any faltering on his end, then, and it comes down to Kyle Lowry jacking shots all game, it's trouble time.
It's it's an interesting, it has been an interesting season for Valanciunas as well, because it seems like early in the games, Dwayne Casey wants to test him out offensively, see what he's got. He gets a touch on either the first or second offensive set for the Raptors, and whether he makes it or not kind of results in his subsequent touches. And yesterday, he and DeRozan had awful starts to that game. I believe they were both scoreless headed into the second half, and Valanciunas at least picked it up on the glass, ended up with 13 rebounds. I think like 10 of them in that third quarter, ended up with 8 points as well. But as far as the offense, what was surprising before DeRozan got hurt yesterday was how poor he played, how poorly he played in that game. It wasn't just the 0 of 8 from the field. It was the fact that usually this guy's good for 10 trips to the free throw line per game. John, is it possible something was going on there before he went down?
What was going on was Tyson Chandler,
right,
who is an elite post player in this league. Yeah, he's getting up there a little bit in age. You know, he's in his 14th or 15th season now, but he still is a monster down there. And while Jonas has all the talent in the world, he's still learning how to play this game at the pro level.
Had problems against Pau Gasol in the Chicago game.
Exactly. These are pros. These are like elite big men who've been around, have seen it all, and know how to play. And Jonas just isn't quite there yet. Granted, I don't think he's too far off, but, you know, when you've got big men down low like that, it's tough on a young guy.
Luck plays into this as well, right? The Raptors have been lucky schedule-wise. Last year, they were very lucky health-wise. They didn't suffer an injury like this at all last season. It was just minor things here and there, and that was part of the reason they surprised many people. It's a surprise that they were 13-2, but not a surprise that they're one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. This is the first time in a while, when you're talking about this group, that they will have faced some adversity where they will have to go to war without one of their big-time crunch-time scorers if DeMar DeRozan's out for an extended period of time. How much is that going to play on this team emotionally, mentally? Because they've never really been in this situation before, Mike.
It'll be a great test. And Dwayne Casey, since he came to Toronto, he's been, you know, the culture of the Raptors has changed. They are, even take last night, they really had no business being in that game. They didn't shoot the ball well. There were some, they didn't get favorable calls. And yet they were in it late in the fourth quarter. They kept battling back. This roster is full of guys that battle. They like they Kyle Lowry kind of his style sort of embodies what this team is all about. For me, they have that this never give up kind of attitude. And so I think that they will. It is tough not having a guy like DeRozan, but there are going to be guys on this roster that step up.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what was encouraging last night was, you know, we're playing the Dallas Mavericks, who are a good team. You know, they're 12-5. But
second,
I mean,
best offensive team in the NBA.
Yep.
Behind the Raptors headed into yesterday.
And they play a tougher schedule than the Raps do and have so far.
And in a much better conference as well.
A much better conference. And even when the Raps got down by 9, by 11, by 15 at one point, they fought their way back. They were resilient all night long. And you're right, Mike. That comes from the coach, and it comes from having a guy like Lowry as your floor general. And it's the one thing that could help them get through this stretch if DeRozan is hurt for any length of time, and could help them get through December, which will be the month that tells us what this team really is.
It's going to be, really interesting, the month of December with the World Juniors taking place. The Raptors go on just a murderous road trip there through the Western Conference. They haven't really seen a lot of the West. They've been pretty good against them. But, starting on December 22nd, they go to Chicago, in L.A. to play the Clippers, in Denver, in Portland, in Golden State, in Phoenix. That's going to be a key stretch of games. You could argue that these next three games are a key stretch of games, especially if you're without DeMar DeRozan. Now, I know the Lakers are the worst team in the Western Conference, but you're going West Coast. There's still Kobe Bryant there. There's still the memories of that 81-point game. You go to Sacramento, they seem a little bit improved this season. Utah's got some young players. Raptors have handled them at home this year. This could be an interesting little swath of games, three-game stretch for the Raptors going out west and without your top scorer in DeMar DeRozan.
Absolutely. Yep. It'll be a huge test. It will, if you look at the records of their next three opponents, it's nothing intimidating. But the fact they're on the road, the fact that they'll probably be without DeMar, it's going to be a test. You could argue so far this season that the Raptors, I mean, 13-3 is impressive, really, no matter how you look at it. But in a way, they kind of have a padded record in the sense that they've played a ton at home. And they are in a very easy division. They're the only team in their division above 500 right now. The East, like I said earlier, is not on the same level as the West. It's a completely different ball game.
The tough teams they faced this year, Washington, they faced them without Bradley Beal. They beat Memphis, and you can't take that away from them. Memphis is the best team in the NBA right now, but they were missing five guys with the flu that day. Now they still had their top guys in that game. They beat Phoenix too. I mean, but Phoenix was on the tail end of a road trip.
They had that OKC game, right, where there's no Durant, no Westbrook, and they had like
just barely
six players.
Beat them. Yeah, and they just barely beat them. It's a different looking OKC team right now. But I mean, you gotta like what you've seen out of the Raptors. Not too many negative things you can take away. And even all three games, the 7-point loss against Chicago is the biggest loss of the season. 5 points in Miami. They missed 15 free throws in that game. Chicago, just one quarter of poor play. And then yesterday against Dallas, I guess you could say it was one poor quarter as well, and they came back nicely. Really had a chance to win that game in the end. End up losing by 4 points. And I misspoke when I said that the Mavericks were the second-best team offensively in the NBA. They are the best. Raptors are second best. You limit the best offensive team in the NBA to 106 points. It's not exactly 67, but it's not bad when you're looking at how great an offense is in Dallas right now.
Yeah, I mean, that speaks to their depth, right? I mean, they've got guys who can come off the bench and score, but those guys are also pretty good defenders. So they can come out and you don't lose a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Raps have lost three games, and they deserve to lose all three of those games this year. And they're losing the games that they're supposed to lose. They're not losing the ones that they're supposed to win.
Right.
And that's key. That's a sign of a good team as well. You can win ugly when necessary, and you can blow out the crappy teams when you should be blowing them out. And when you have an off night like they did last night, you still stay with a good Western Conference team and get it to within one possession at the end of the game. I mean, that they didn't by the numbers, they didn't deserve to be within one possession last night, but they managed to get it pretty close and almost eke that one out.
Yeah, Raptors in L.A. to play the Lakers tomorrow night. When we come back, we'll revisit that big trade. Blue Jays sending Brett Laurie, Franklin Barreto, Kendall Graveman, and Sean Nolan to Oakland for Josh Donaldson.
What?
It was kind of surprising. It blew up Twitter last night, understandably, and we got wall-to-wall coverage today on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Sportsnet Radio Network. And we'll talk about how the turf might impact Josh Donaldson and maybe impact Melky Cabrera's decision to return to the Blue Jays. We'll also get into the Maple Leafs. They play the Capitals at home tonight and kind of look like a different team since Salute Gate. Get into them a little bit coming up next. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Mike Johnson and John Gregg on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Mike Johnson and John Gregg revisiting that massive, epic, landscape-changing deal from late last night. Blue Jays sending Brett Laurie, Franklin Barreto, Kendall Graveman, and Sean Nolan to Oakland for Josh freaking Donaldson, who, you're not going to be laughed out of the room if you say he's the best third baseman in all of baseball. It's that simple. And just moments ago, about 5 minutes ago, Brett Laurie finally tweeting on the subject matter, tweeted out a picture of it looks like a note he took on his phone because he didn't want to be limited to 140 characters. Here's what it says. Mind was racing as I laid in bed last night. Thoughts of the past and future flash constantly. Want to give the biggest shout out to all my Canadian brothers and sisters who supported me. You fans made my time in Toronto unforgettable. I cannot thank you enough for allowing me to play in my own backyard with a maple leaf on my chest every day. It was a blessing. It will be truly missed. We will meet again at some point. Hashtag cheers Canada. New chapters upon me, and I intend to make it worth it. 5 exclamation points. Be easy. And yes, I didn't mention how many emojis were involved in this. There were a few, though. You can check it out on Brett Laurie's Twitter account, which is at BLaurie13. It's emotional for him. It's emotional for a lot of Blue Jays fans as well, because it was one of the more exciting aspects of this team in the last 5 years was Brett Laurie's arrival in the Sean Markham trade, the Milwaukee Brewers. His arrival on the scene in the major leagues in Baltimore, hits that home run, hits the grand slam at Rogers Center, the high fives with more vigor than we've ever seen anyone high five a human being before. Countless arm strains, I imagine, the result of his high fives. He was an exciting, exciting player. And as he mentioned in the tweet as well, he was Canadian, Mike, and he's gone. So the dream of 3 Canadians in the starting lineup next season for the Blue Jays now dead.
It is. It's dead in the water. You know what? They added Martin. They have Dalton Pompey, who there's a lot of hype behind. What he did late last season was very impressive. There's enough Canadian content on the Jays.
Should it even matter,
though?
It
shouldn't matter. It really shouldn't matter. And it's good that...
We had Corey Koski here.
Yeah.
Didn't really work out either.
We have cool hats with...
Rob Ducey. Remember Rob Ducey?
Sure.
Dude, yeah. Is awesome.
You know what? But if you go to a Jays game, maybe next to Batista jerseys, you see a lot of Brett Laurie jerseys.
Right.
He was very popular here, and not just with young females. They were devastated on Twitter, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, there's enough Canadian content. It is, when you're the only Canadian team in the league, it is kind of nice to have at least one or a few Canadians. It does matter. The Canadian content does matter a little bit to the fans, even though it doesn't make a difference on the field, right?
Yeah, I mean, Brett Laurie is no longer a Toronto Blue Jay. Let's stop talking about him. Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, I don't know.
Dude's had a 127 OPS plus last year. You know what Laurie's was? 97. You know what that means?
Yeah.
He's not as good as an average Major League Baseball player.
Plus, he was barely on the field last year.
Which that helps, right? 15.4 WAR, second to Mike Trout last year. That's Josh Donaldson. Defensive WAR T2 last season, pretty good. Like, this is awesome, people.
Yeah, it's Mark Simon of ESPN Statistics tweeted out something that I favorited just moments ago about the Blue Jays and their defense and how many runs were saved by the Blue Jays defense at both the catching position and at third base last year, which was in the single digits. It was Blue Jays saved 2 runs at catcher last year and 2 runs at third base, which is kind of surprising the way Brett Laurie plays defense there, although he only played half a season. Russell Martin, last year alone, 12 defensive runs saved. Josh Donaldson, 20 just last season at third base.
Reason number 2 why we should be excited about Josh Donaldson. He was playing Mortal Kombat and watching the Golf Channel when he found out about the trade yesterday. Oh. That is awesome. I wonder what the kill move was.
How many other people in the world at that moment were watching, what was it, the Golf Network you said?
The Golf Channel, yeah.
Golf Channel and playing Mortal Kombat. He probably was the only person on the planet doing that.
Talk about a second screen.
And I salute him for that.
Yeah, and John Antini tweeted out the video of Donaldson hitting a drive over 300 yards. So he loves his golf.
John Antini loves his golf. There is no doubt about that.
Well, I was saying Josh Donaldson loves his golf.
But sorry, yes.
Yeah, they both love their golf. And right now, the conference call taking place between Josh Donaldson and the Toronto media. So we'll keep an eye on that if anything comes out of that. So, yeah, all day we're going to be talking about this big Blue Jays trade. And I'll have Mike Wilner hopefully in studio after noon today to talk about it a little bit more, maybe take some of your phone calls as well, noon till 1. But the hockey team plays as well tonight. Toronto Maple Leafs at home against the Washington Capitals, who are, you know, they play in the right division. They play in the Metro, which means they're in the playoffs right now, and they came up with a big win over the Islanders yesterday. They have that guy that wears 8. He's good, Alex Ovechkin. And the Maple Leafs, ever since Stick Gate, Salute Gate, Stick Gazi, whatever, I don't know. They have lost a game. They lost in Pittsburgh on Wednesday, but they came back after being down 2-0 after the opening 20. They tied it up at threes and kind of a questionable goal in overtime, I think, Jonathan Bernier. But they lose 4-3 on Wednesday in Pittsburgh. Those three efforts, Tampa, Detroit, Pittsburgh, very, very solid efforts, and they needed it after the embarrassments of 6-2 in Buffalo and 9-2 at home against the Predators, John.
Yeah, they felt a little bit like the Raptors last night, or against Pittsburgh, I should say. You know, down early, fighting back against a powerhouse team. You got to be happy with the way that game went. And, you know, as you said, you've got to be happy with the way the three games went since those horrendous two games. But, yeah, I mean, the Leafs are they're getting better. Their possession numbers are creeping up. You know, they're not at historically low marks like they've been for the past couple of years.
That's still what we can hope for now, that the Maple Leafs aren't historically bad.
Yeah, I mean, they're still not good. But, you know, they're creeping out of the bottom 10 in the league in possession. And that bodes well for a team that is exactly, I think, where most people expected, fighting for like the 7-8 spot in the Eastern Conference.
Would you rather be the Edmonton Oilers right now?
I would rather be the Toronto Maple Leafs right now. You could argue that if you were a fan base, you might rather be the Edmonton Oilers because they could end up with another top player. At some point, that team is going to figure it out. At some point, they're going to make the kind of
moves. How many first overalls do they need, John?
I don't know, but, you know, talk to the Pittsburgh Penguins about first overall picks, right? I mean, they had four of them.
Yeah, but they got
three or four of them.
But they got two generational players. Well, one who might go down as the best of all time in Sidney Crosby and Malkin's, you know, what? Top five center in the NHL?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a crapshoot, but, you know, there's more to hope for in Edmonton in terms of what the possibilities for good could be. And here in Toronto, you know, we have the team we have, a middling team that's not going to have a high pick, is not going to be like have home ice advantage in the first round. They've got their own holes to fill as well. Some of the ones that are similar in Edmonton in terms of you need a number one center and you need a number one defenseman. They need that here in Toronto, too. They just have better depth and a couple of, you know, more mature players right now and a better goaltending.
Yeah, and William Nylander could be a nice addition when he plays in the NHL, we assume, as early as next year. Hopefully that – he got a skate to the side of the head the other day playing overseas.
And then they signed Donald Brashear.
Did they really?
Modo signed Donald Brashear to come in and regulate.
Yikes.
On the advice of Peter Forsberg as well. He recommended Mr. Brashear.
Goodness.
Yep.
That's exciting.
Veteran presence in the room, I'm sure.
Exactly.
This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Grigg and Mike Johnston on the Sportsnet Radio Network. So the Maple Leafs, I mentioned, have played three solid games after Stikgazy. Actually, the Lightning game happened during Stikgazy, sort of like 2.5 hours before it happened. But you mentioned, John, that the possession numbers have gone up. They're actually getting a little bit healthier as well. Joffrey Lupul returns, and we know he's been a nice player when he's healthy. Problem is he hasn't been healthy a whole heck of a lot. They also get David Booth. I won't want to say back, but he's never played before he returned from this injury that knocked him out for the first part of the season. And this team, for the first time in a long time, is actually a four-line team, and we see them rolling the four lines. How much of their improved play the last three games is because they do have a little bit more depth now, and they don't have tomato cans on that fourth line, Mike?
I think it's clear. It's clear. It's a positive. They're a better team when they have guys like Lupul in the lineup. It goes without saying, really. They start a five-game homestand tonight. Now, the Leafs playing at home isn't necessarily always a great thing. They're just one game above 500 at home this season. But this is the forward lineup that they anticipated having heading into the season, more or less. And it'll be interesting to see what they can do in this five-game homestand against teams. You know, Washington is a good team. They play the Canucks, who have the best record in the NHL. Congratulations, Canucks fans.
Which we all expected, right?
Yeah. Sure. And, but, you know, the Dallas Stars have struggled. The New Jersey Devils are a mid-level team. They're not great. And the Leafs, like you said, they're playing well the last few games after those two just terrible, really season-altering games against Buffalo and Nashville. We saw after that they have turned around. They've played well, and their depth is their strength. They're not getting all-star goaltending. And guys like Leo Komarov, who is really should just be a third-line grinder kind of guy, he's putting up points. Mike Santarelli's contributing. Now you have Lupo and David Booth, offensively gifted guys that don't mind throwing their body around. They're back in the fold. This five-game homestand is going to say a lot about what the Leafs can do the remainder of the season, especially if they can stay healthy up front.
I think that's a good point you make too, Mike, about, you know, a season-altering couple of games.
Yep.
I mean, it doesn't get any worse than what happened in those two games. Like, I don't remember the last time it was that bad ever, you know? And if that brought the room together, you know, as Randy Carlyle said, you know, it's woken people up and made them maybe feel like, you know, they got to be more responsible, then great. Then maybe this team can be better and use its depth to its advantage, because that is also an excellent point that, you know, they've got four lines that they can roll. And they got guys that can move in and out of the lineup, too. Like, don't forget, like, a guy, Brandon Kozun, who was playing wicked, right? And everybody was like, who is this guy? Love him. He's coming back soon as well. Where does he fit in? I don't know, but probably like a fourth line guy, a black ace type, you know, and, you know, energy. A guy like that, a guy like Santarelli, even a guy like Booth, who you're kind of hoping maybe can pot you 20 and you catch some lightning in a bottle with him like they did last year with Mason Raymond. I mean, he's not going to get to 20 now because he's missed, you know, the first quarter of the season, but that kind of pace, at least, you never know what can happen.
And another one of those guys, energy guys, and a surprising guy as far as performance is Richard Panik as well. In limited time, has provided a nice little offensive spark, had the big goal late in the game to tie a game up. He's relegated to the press box, at least for Wednesday's game in Pittsburgh. That's another guy who can be in and out of the lineup. But again, we're talking about bottom of the roster type guys, right? I don't know if this team has the top six to compete with the elite teams.
Well, the problem for the top six is down the middle.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, Tyler Bozak's a nice player, and you know, he seems to have good chemistry, as we all know, with Kessel. But you know, he's not a legitimate number one guy. Nazem Kadri, you know, the analytics people will tell you his numbers are better than Bozak's. He's just not, you know, catching any breaks or getting the right opportunities. But again, I mean, he's not your number one center either. He would be a you know, better than serviceable number two. That's been a hole in this town since Matt Sundin left, and none of the GMs who've been up there have been able to figure that one out. And it's, you know, it's glaring, along with the number one D-man. It's a glaring spot.
Leo Komarov, Mike, you mentioned it. And John, I know you love this guy. It's ridiculous what we're talking about. His first go around here in Toronto really didn't even need to play with a stick. He was here to bang bodies and provide a physical presence and do those things that don't necessarily show up on the score sheet. He's shown up plenty on the score sheet this year. He's tied with Phil Kessel for the team lead in assists. He's been unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, he's been he's been more than what they hoped for. They hoped for energy and some defensive responsibility from him, and they're getting him chipping in big time offensively as well. I mean, he's one of the reasons why this team that was 28th overall in the penalty kill last year is creeping into the top 10 this year. I mean, he's just that kind of guy. Offensive zone start percentage is brutal. You know, his possession numbers aren't great, but that's what happens when you're playing against the other team's best players more often than not and starting in your own zone more often than not. You know, there's no complaints with Leo Komarov, and he's still got that edge. He's still running around pissing people off and throwing hits and doing all the things he did before when he didn't need a stick. You know, now he's just chipping in offensively as well.
Roman Polak still out with that knee injury. Looks like it's a thing that's going to take about a month to recover from. And it was a situation now where the Maple Leafs called up Corbinian Holzer. He fills the immediate need for the Maple Leafs. But you've still got guys that have performed under expectations. I think Jake Gardner is clearly one of those guys who's performed under expectations. John, if you were looking at, I mean, you mentioned the need for a number one center. That's a huge need. It's been that way for years. But what is the bigger need? Is it another guy up the middle, or is it improving the back end? Because there's not a whole lot of defensively responsible defensemen on this team. Yeah, Morgan Riley's a nice player, and you know what? I would say he's taken a bit of a step back in recent games, but I think by anybody's understanding of the game, Jake Gardner's had a pretty brutal season. The Stefan Robidas signing seems like a pretty brutal one. There's not a lot to really get excited about on the back end of this team either.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to remember that, you know, Morgan Riley and Jake Gardner are young guys, right? That's the hardest position to play in the league, and they're learning every game. And you know, they don't have the greatest role models on that team to learn from, right? Yeah. So it's up to the coach, who is a bit of a hard ass and isn't afraid to call them out in public and, I'm sure, in private. But no, I would think you need the center. This league, the best teams in this league have two things: wicked players down the middle and good goaltending.
Yeah.
The Leafs don't have that guy down the middle who can dominate a game, who can win every, like, you know, win 58% of his draws, score goals, set up guys, make the players around him better. Again, Bozak is a nice player. But he's not somebody you'd want to lean on. He's not Joe Thornton, right? Yeah. He's not Tyler Seguin. He's not Sidney Crosby. And I know that those are superstars that don't come along every day, but, you know, you got to find somebody to step in and play that role.
And you mentioned the goaltending. It was a big reason why the Maple Leafs got off to that spectacular start last year, and then a big reason why the roof caved in after that California road trip when Jonathan Bernier went down. And we were all ready to anoint him as the clear number one goaltender in this city, and I guess he still is. But there's been moments, and the save percentage is .915, which is about league average. But I know, John, you're big on the 5-on-5 save percentage, which is pretty up there. I just look at, there's times where Jonathan Bernier, whether it's the first shot of the game he lets in or at a key moment, well, in overtime against the Penguins, that overtime goal probably shouldn't have got through his glove. I know Sidney Crosby's stick kind of waving in front didn't help, but I don't know. Is Jonathan Bernier one of those elite level goaltenders that can carry you through 60 plus games in a regular season?
I think Jonathan Bernier has the potential to be that guy. He's not right now. I wouldn't say that. But, you know, he's also not even like the surefire number one. Like, I think he should be, but are we going to actually see him get number one minutes, right? I mean, he has started, I think, the last four games in a row, and, you know, Reimer's been kind of just playing on the second end of back-to-backs or whatever. But, you know, it needs to, the questions every day of, am I playing, am I not, that doesn't, you know, bode well for a guy's confidence and for his psyche. And I think, you know, if you just anoint him publicly, you're the number one guy, play him 80% of the games, let's see what he can do. And
John,
listen,
it's funny you say 80%. He's started 8 of the last 10 games.
Okay, so then there you go. But it's still in the paper every day. You know, who's starting tonight? They don't know, right? I mean, James Reimer should be the backup. So let's make him the backup.
Don't you think they know? I mean, they're not going to tell us. Randy Carlyle's not going to tell us. But actions speak louder than what he can say to the media anyways. And he's started 8 of the last 10. It's pretty clear that he's his number one.
This is a non-issue. Like, Bernier's the starter. His numbers are better than Reimer's. He plays more. He's not an all-star. He's not one of the best goalies in the league right now.
He was playing that way the first half of last season, though. Unbelievable.
Absolutely. And this year, the big difference this year is he's not going out and stealing games like he has in the past.
Yeah.
He's keeping the Leafs in some games. You know, the game against the Pens, that could have got out of hand relatively quickly. Bernier stuck in there, question the overtime goal, but you know, he kept them in the game. They got a point, and that's good. But he's not stealing the games. But the fact that and we mentioned earlier, the Leafs back end is less than stellar, but they play decent team defense. Their forwards this season, much more so than last season, are being more effective in their own zone. And I don't know. I just, to me, it's another goaltending controversy or whatever you want to say in Toronto. It's just, it's a nothing story.
I want to build on what you said there, Mike, about not stealing games. I can think of just one game this season where a goaltender has stolen a win for the Maple Leafs. That was the Chicago game when James Reimer was out of his mind, made like 30 saves in the third period. That's about it. And to me, that's actually a good sign for the Maple Leafs, isn't it? Because, yeah, Jonathan Bernier did steal a whole whack of wins for the Maple Leafs at the beginning of last season, and it got expectations completely out of whack, and it shouldn't have been a surprise to see the save percentage go down and PDO and whatever second half of last season, that they're not getting that. And, John, I know you're all over the PDO and the advanced stats, so
oh, yeah.
So they must be okay then. They must be in good shape PDO-wise.
No, they're not.
Oh, okay, never mind.
No,
that.
I mean, they're still at the top of the table, right? They're not number one. I mean, the best teams in the league when it comes to PDO are also the best teams in the league and the highest scoring. But, you know, no, their possession numbers are brutal and their PDO is unsustainable and it'll come back to haunt them just like it did last year. You know, but I do think they're hope, and I don't put it on Bernier. I mean, the guy's got like a 9.26 5-on-5 yeah. save percentage. Like, it's
don't you see the same things I see though, John? Like, there's these moments.
I do, but I see him. He's the one. He's left by himself half the time. You know, they're giving up fewer shots these days, but they're still giving up a lot of shots and high quality shots. You know, teams are buzzing around them in the offensive zone.
But they've limited opponents to under 30 the last three games.
Sure, and that's why they've won those games. And who was in net? I mean, it's like if you can keep that trend moving forward, then you're in good shape. But you got to protect your goalie more than the Leafs historically have over the past couple of years. And that's why I don't put it on Bernier. You know, he lets in early goals and everybody, you know, bitches and complains about it. But, you know, it's a team game. And those guys are out there, you know, giving up crappy plays 26 seconds in against the Pittsburgh freaking Penguins, who you can't fall behind. You can't sleep on them for a moment or they're going to score.
The power play has been brutal recently. Just one goal since November 12th on the power play. They were 3-for-4 against the Bruins in that big 6-1 win. But since then, just one power play goal, and that was against the Lightning. And Nazem Kadri's kind of been the focal point as far as the power play is concerned, and his lack of minutes, didn't play on it at all in Pittsburgh. He was practicing on the point in practice on the power play. They just haven't been able to get into the zone entries. Everybody talks about the zone entries for this team on the power play. And people also point to the fact when you're comparing the two, because you have to do this apparently, compare Tyler Bozak and Nazem Kadri, because everybody wants to decide which one's the number one on this team. And Bozak continues to get the minutes as number one, and he continues to get the minutes on the power play. And a lot of his points, I mean, what? Like, more than half his points this season have come with the man advantage. You take that out of it, and maybe it's a little bit more fair comparison. But does Kadri have to be a key point, be a key producer on this power play for the Maple Leafs to have a good power play? Is it an imperative for Randy Carlyle to get him going and not to just remove him from the power play because he's the problem?
Well, that's how you fix the Leafs blue line, is you just throw Kadri back there, you know, put him beside Phaneuf, right?
Yeah, and then bring Gardner up front.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Kadri gets his fair share, more than his fair share of criticism, but you can't deny when you talk about just offensive, you know, being an offensively gifted player, he's one of the top four or five guys on the Leafs right now. And if you can spark him by giving him some extra power play time, it might, you know, that might be the spark the power play needs. It might be the spark Kadri needs. But the Leafs, Kadri doesn't have to have a bunch of success on the power play for the Leafs to have a good power play. It's, you know, like you said, it comes down to the fundamentals. Is you need a lot of time in the offensive zone on the power play to have a lot of success. And if you can't establish puck control by getting it in deep by zone entry, you're losing anyways, right?
Is it a situation where it's just like an ebb and flow thing where, yeah, the PDO is going to level off and teams that win a bunch in shootouts, that's eventually going to dry up. Teams that go through power play slumps, eventually they get hot on the power plays. One of those deals?
Sure. I mean, these things are cyclical for sure. I mean, we've seen it before with the Leafs where they're, you know, power play is great, power play sucks. Power play is great, power play sucks. Same on the PK, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think you can, I mean, it's no harm to have Nazem Kadri playing the point on the power play. He can pass the puck. He can make some moves. He can also, you know, cycle down low and switch it up with the forwards when necessary. It can't hurt. But, you know, it's a systems thing as well. It's not just, you know, oh, they've gone cold. It's, you know, you got to look at it, what they're doing on the power play. And you know, I'm not the coach and, you know, I defer to his expertise, but, you know, switch it up. And if Kadri on the point, you know, if he can run the power play a little bit better and maybe, you know, feather some saucers across the ice to Big Dion, who can wire them into people's chests in front of the net, then you never know what's going to happen.
When we come back, the Edmonton Oilers, we touched on them a little bit. We might continue that discussion and how miserable they are. They've lost 9 straight, and the last couple of games have gone to overtime. That's nice. They got a point out of it. They've still yet to beat a Western Conference opponent, which would be fine if you played in the East. Problem is, you played 14 games against teams in your own conference.
Man, it's ugly in Edmonton right now.
And you've yet to win one of those games. Also, maybe get to some of our memories of Pat Quinn. And Mikey has been waiting all day for this. We'll do a little Grey Cup and Vanier Cup preview. And maybe we'll also talk about Josh Donaldson's conference call, which is happening right now. And he is talking about the original Nintendo as well. So
this guy's awesome, people. He's awesome.
Best player.
Looks like we're going to have a fun time talking about Josh Donaldson for the next 4 years. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Mike Johnson and John Gregg on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Dave Serum.
Trying to find openings. Well, Cole went right at Hibbert and lost it. Here comes Augustine. Meanwhile, Hansbro and Anderson get involved. The shove by Anderson. Fight over quickly out of the floor to keep Hansbro away.
Yep, that was another altercation involving Tyler Hansbro, the Raptors forward who's in the middle of more pushing, shoving, and trash talk than any role player in the NBA. You might know him from his YouTube videos, starring in such titles as Sebastian Telfair slaps Tyler Hansbro in the face, Will Bynum gets ejected for punching Tyler Hansbro, and simply, Bloody Hansbro. But chances are, you don't know him as the quiet, shy, hardworking middle child from small-town Missouri, as the spokesperson and advocate who draws inspiration from those closest to him, and as the self-proclaimed most laid-back guy in the whole locker room. I got to know the real Tyler Hansbro and found out that he's not crazy or a bully. He's just misunderstood.
I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
More appears in the latest edition of Sportsnet Magazine, available on Next Issue and in the Apple Newsstand.
Sportsnet Magazine Alive, Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Mike Johnson and John Gregg. We'll get to our Grey Cup preview, mostly Mike's Grey Cup preview, in just a moment. But the Oilers lose again. They've lost 9 straight. They've yet to beat a team in the Western Conference. That stinks. Does it come down to goaltending and that's it for this team? Because, John, we were rattling off some of the numbers in the break there, and they're not in the numbers, the win-loss totals are horrible. The possession stuff and the PDO, it's not as horrible as the record would indicate, is it?
Yeah, it's not as bad. Yeah. You know, better than the Leafs, that's for sure. You know, they basically fall into the middle of the league in terms of possession numbers, a little bit less than 50%. And, you know, their PDO is like second worst in the league. So they're not catching any breaks. They're not getting the best goaltending, although you can't put it all down on like just the player, the individual goaltenders themselves.
No, it was the goaltending coach's fault.
Right. Yes. It's Frederick Chabot's fault that the Edmonton Oilers can get outshot, you know, 43-16 or whatever it was last night.
Yep.
No, and I mean, it's, you know, I don't think it's Dallas Eggen's fault either. I think, you know, they're building there. They don't have the depth. They don't have a good defense core. And that's, you know, it's up to the guys upstairs to go out and make some bold moves and really make, turn that team around, get some people in that room who can, you know, just simply perform better.
Yeah, it's Groundhog Day there. They're going to end up with a high draft pick. They're probably going to pick a center or a skilled forward that they do every year.
Well, that would be the mistake. If you can't get McDavid or Eichel, then, you know what, go out and get the best available defenseman. Because this is a loaded NHL draft. 2015, like, you're going to get good players at 28, let alone at 3. So go out and take the defenseman and hope for the best and hope he's not Justin Schultz.
But right now they're on pace to draft either McDavid or Eichel.
You can't not draft either of those guys. They are franchise-altering players.
Well, yeah, and it seems like, yeah, they've had high picks, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Jordan Eberle and Taylor Hall. And Hall's, I think we can all agree, the best of the bunch, but he's not franchise-altering, right? Like, they haven't really lucked into one of those drafts where there has been a McDavid, and maybe they're, you know, this is a once in a generation type player like that. And I guess you could say, as lucky as they are to win all those lotteries, they haven't lucked into one of those franchise-altering players.
Yeah, well, as we were saying in an earlier segment, I mean, they haven't lucked into, like, the Crosby, right? Yep. The Ovechkin, whatever. But, I mean, Taylor Hall's the highest-scoring left-winger in the NHL over the past couple of seasons. So, I mean, he's a good player. And, you know, Nuge rushed. I would say he was rushed into the league. They shouldn't have brought, you know, the skinny 18-year-old kid up. I would honestly say that it's hurt his development. He could have used another year of seasoning in junior and just the chance to dominate, you know, and go out and, you know, dominate the world juniors as well. Like, that's the problem when you pick these guys now. There's so much pressure to bring them into your lineup when you've got a crappy lineup, but it's not always the way to go.
And maybe a mistake with Nail Yakupov.
Yeah, I mean, same thing. You know, was he mature enough to play a professional game? Like, it doesn't look like it. He certainly hasn't performed up to it. You know, obviously he's clashed with Dallas a few times and you know, I just don't think he was ready to do it. And again, but the pressure to bring guys like that up and to, you know, to sell tickets even, you know, got to get the fans out to watch the Oilers. Well, they're going to want to watch the number one overall pick, so you better play him.
Oh, the harshest thing in the last few days has been, that embarrassment at home against the Blackhawks and then walking off the ice and the way that building works in Edmonton where they have to go through like the concession area after the game and the fans are like right in their faces booing them. It's one thing to be separated by glass, but to have somebody right in your face booing, like imagine there was somebody to your left every time you had a horrible take, John, right now on this radio station that was booing you. That'd be brutal.
No, you know, there's nothing worse than sucking, right? It doesn't matter what you're doing in life.
I've done it for years.
Athlete. Yeah, but look where you are, Ben.
Yes.
You know, you're here. You know, it's harsh and you know, what are you going to do? I mean, it's not like they're not trying, you know, it's just that the team sucks and they don't have the personnel to compete right now.
When you're a Western Conference team and you literally cannot beat any other Western Conference team, you are doomed.
Yeah, it's tough. At least they had the 80s though. They were fun.
They're going to be good again, guys. Like I swear.
Yes.
They're, you know, these picks are going to pan out at some point and management's got to figure it out at some point too. And when they do, they've got talent. Like more talent than the Leafs do up front.
Yeah, no question. Also, big news in the hockey world this week, Pat Quinn's passing. He was pretty legendary coach around these parts, the Maple Leafs and a couple of Eastern Conference final runs. Also, of course, Stanley Cup final run with the Vancouver Canucks, the front office there in 94. He was, I love my favorite, and I imagine it's everybody's favorite image of Pat Quinn, at least during his playing days, is running over Bobby Orr in 69 in his rookie season, blowing him up. And Orr had his head down, okay? It was a clean hit, clearly. Started a huge brawl, but he was a guy who it's difficult to talk about his tenure in this city without also talking about the way he dealt with the media. It wasn't his favorite thing, and was hosting Tim and Sid on Monday and had Darcy Tucker on, and he said he absolutely could not stand it, hated it with an undying, burning passion. And I wasn't lucky enough to be in a position to be down at the Air Canada Center during those years and witness to some of the media clashes. But John, you went down a couple of times. What were your interactions like with Pat Quinn?
I actually, when I saw Quinn, it was when he would come back.
Yeah.
I that was when I was kind of just starting out a little bit. And, you know, it's funny with returning coaches to Toronto. They absolutely hate it here. They can't stand it here. When they come back, they're joking around with all the guys who used to grill them every day, right? You're in the fishbowl, and, you know, everybody can understand why, you know, coaches, you know, burn out here and don't like it here and are grumbly with the media. But, you know, he comes back and he was joking around in the scrum with all, like, you know, the beat guys who we knew. And he was nice enough to take some time to talk to me about something entirely different for a story I was doing. And you know, and he was jovial about it, right? And it just, he's a nice guy. And I know Chris Johnson has said some similar things that when he was a young guy on the beat, you know, Pat Quinn was really good to him. And I think that's the kind of legacy that a guy like this leaves. And you know, nobody's had anything bad to say about Pat Quinn, really, since we heard of his passing. And it speaks to who the man was.
My favorite image of Pat Quinn is he was the coach of the Leafs, and he took a puck or a stick to the face when he was on the bench.
Sure, yeah.
And he came back with two black eyes, and he was there, and it was just, he was just the toughest coach in the league. And you could tell the players loved it. And I think that's that, you know, like John said, there's no one in this city or really in the hockey world that'll have anything bad to say about the guy.
Darcy Tucker told a great story on Monday as well about how in practice, how Pat, you know, his knees weren't all that great, and he kind of stayed off to the side during practice. And in a drill one time, he came a little further than he normally went, and Darcy didn't see him, ran into him, and Darcy got flattened. And Pat went over to him and said, "You all right, young man?" Like, yeah. Just still, he was built like a brick house.
We shouldn't forget, too, Viktor Tikhonov died this week.
Yeah.
You know, probably the second greatest coach in the history of Russian hockey, and, you know, a guy who led all those great Soviet teams to you know, domination in the international hockey world. He was an important figure in hockey, and, you know, kind of overshadowed a little bit on this side of the pond with Pat Quinn's passing, but Viktor Tikhonov also will be missed.
Yeah, no question. A tough,
maybe not by his players, but, you know, yeah. Legacy-wise.
Yeah, it's certainly was a tough week for the hockey community. About as good as it gets, though, for football in this country this weekend. Got the Vanier Cup going today on Sportsnet. Pregame show goes at 12:30. McMaster taking on Montreal, and then you got kickoff after 1 o'clock. And I don't know. Say what you will about the skill in CIS, but these games tend to come down to the final seconds. It's some pretty memorable moments, even in these CIS playoffs. But tomorrow we got the Grey Cup from BC Place in Vancouver. It's the Calgary Stampeders against the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And Mike, if you go by regular season record, I mean, this should be no contest, right? I mean, Calgary dominated the entire league throughout the 18-game regular season.
They've been the best team, and if all is right in the world, just from an optics standpoint, the Stampeders need to win this game, because if a 9-9 team wins the championship, it kind of raises an eyebrow. You know, we've seen teams in the past with less than stellar regular season records go on and win championships, and it almost feels a little different when that happens compared to when the best team in the league wins the championship. That's what's supposed to happen. But in saying that, tomorrow's game should be a pretty close game between two teams that have been playing very well late in the season. Hamilton has won 8 of their last 10. Zach Collaros is healthy. They've got this Grey Cup is going to come down to, there's a lot of interesting stylistic matchups and battles. In the 1999 Grey Cup, it was the last time these two teams played. Dave Dickinson was a quarterback for the Stamps. He lost that game, and he was intercepted in that game by Orlando Steinhauer, who's now the defensive coordinator for the Ticats. So it's a rematch. It's a rematch of that Grey Cup, which was a fun one, which also took place at BC Place. And the in terms of a gameplay, tomorrow's game is going to come down to Hamilton's run defense versus Calgary's run offense.
Mike, can they stop John Cornish? Can anybody stop John Cornish in the CFL right now?
If there's any team that can, it'll be the Ticats. Now, Cornish didn't play. He was injured when they played the Ticats twice earlier in the season. But the Ticats had the best run defense in the league. They averaged 70. They only gave up 72, almost 73 yards per game. And on the flip side, the Stampeders ran for 136 yards a game. So there's your game. Whoever wins that battle is going to end up winning the game. The quarterbacks, both very talented, future stars in this league, Zach Collaros, Bo Levi Mitchell. It'll be fun to watch and see how they manage the games, see how they get their running backs involved. And you know what? It really is going to come down to that battle. It's going to come down to, can Cornish get to that second level, get first downs, get big plays?
We're talking about first-year starters for both guys, and if you evaluate the regular season matchups, Collaros didn't play in either of them, right?
Yeah, and it's a mystery to see how Hamilton's going to deal with Cornish, because they didn't see him this year. But Calgary, who beat Hamilton twice, they didn't have to beat Zach Collaros, because he was also injured earlier in the season. So there's a lot of there's some intrigue. It'll be a good. It was a weird year in the CFL in terms of how poor the East was early in the season.
Yeah,
there's the Red Blacks are back, and it kind of thinned out the talent across the league with having an extra team. So there was a lot of low-scoring games. I think this Grey Cup will be a very entertaining. Won't be a shootout, but it won't be low-scoring.
And it's a great day for Hamilton, right?
Exactly.
I mean, you have as long as they don't have any more mudslides going on.
Yeah. You have McMaster playing today. You have Hamilton playing tomorrow. It could be a really great football weekend for that part of the country.
Yeah, and got to give a shout-out to Brandon Banks. I mean, kicking is a huge part of the CFL game. And when you're coming off a week where you have a couple of kick return touchdowns, pretty safe to say that you could be the X factor in this game.
He could be the X factor. Mark Killam, the special teams coordinator for the Stamps, he's going to have his hands full.
Plus, shout out to the Imagine Dragons halftime performers for the Grey Cup game. One of these days, they're going to actually have a Canadian performer at halftime of the Grey Cup game. It won't be this week. Guys,
I got to make a quick shout out too.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. Just a new podcast on Sportsnet and iTunes. Junior, the CHL podcast for CHL fans. Jeff Merrick, Sam Cosentino, two guys who there aren't anybody who knows more about junior hockey than them. News, analysis, and interviews every Wednesday afternoon.
They're not just breaking down that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie an hour each week?
No.
Okay. So, Junior, check it out. Guys, it's been great. That'll do it for another edition of Sportsnet Magazine Live. Coming up next, Mike Wilner, supposedly in studio to talk about Josh Donaldson and a massive deal for the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Mike Johnson and John Gregg. This has been Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.